This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome inside the War Zone for the Wrestling War Zone, Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective. I am JT alongside my buddy, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good, and I'm excited because this is our 20th episode, Chad. We've defied the critics, those that said we'd never make it. Like Captain Tennille, we have survived, and we have tied tonight Letters from Kayfabe and Letters from Center Stage. I always picture 20 episodes kind of being the benchmark.
I mean, I think if you make 20, you at least have a decent run, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're legit now, so there you go.
Even if it's 20 since, like, 10 months, but we're doing okay.
We're doing okay. That's like one every 2 weeks, probably averaging. That's not too bad.
We had a hot streak, and then we had some time off, but we're back hot and heavy, and we are careening toward our final WWE pay-per-view of the year. Before we dive into that, though, how are you? How's things been?
I have a little bit of a parent corner since we can crib all of Bill Simmons' podcast, Good Ideas, the half-bake that was on PTBs of yesteryear.
We call the Dunkin's Donuts.
Dunkin's Donuts. another short-lived. That was something that didn't make 20 installments.
What lasted longer, that or Scott's Three Steps?
Oh, I'd forgotten about Scott's Three Steps.
Or Talking Trash with Tommy Gunn. Was that longer?
Yeah, we had a couple episodes of Talking Trash with Tommy Gunn, but we'll see if one of those gets saved by the Bell cast. But I encountered a incident at a birthday party, drama at the 5-year-old birthday party. And it was kind of a nuanced argument where I saw both sides.
No, hang on, because the last time we talked about you at a birthday party, you lost your pants in the ball pit.
Well, that was a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
That was just a family affair. Losing my pants around the fam. No, this was at a place like that, though. I mean, all these birthday parties they do them. In our gym, where the town we live in, where they do gymnastics, so like the kids can jump around on the trampolines and tumble, and they have the little, I don't even know what you call it, ball pit, but it's like the styrofoam square pit that you can dive in. This party was at this place, but guy gets there with his son, and as soon as he comes in, like, he walks in, he's carrying his son, and then you just see the son turn like sheet white, like, oh, he's about to throw up. Ugh. So he pukes over on the, they make it to the trash can, but he throws up. The guy goes and cleans him up in the bathroom. Everybody, you know, of course there's always like the murmuring among the parents. Oh, did you, blah blah blah, did you see this? Well, the guy comes out and he's like, I think he just ate something bad because he says he feels fine now, and the kid looked fine. He starts like running on the trampoline and stuff like that. Well, the birthday party's girl's dad ends up going to this other dad and telling him that they feel uncomfortable with a sick child there, and that, you know, other parents may not, you know, feel comfortable with that.
Right. He was probably, basically, people were probably saying it to him, right? There's no way he's coming up on his own. Yeah, he's probably hearing people running their mouths.
I don't know about that. I mean, this guy's kind of, it may just be like a wild-haired idea in his mind. He's kind of like that. He's pretty extremist.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I mean, obviously a couple people probably thought that, but I mean, I don't put it past this other guy to, you know, make a, he amplifies things. I'll say that. He definitely exaggerates. Well, so the other dad kind of takes the hint, gets pissed, and, you know, takes the kid, basically grabs the kid off of this running trampoline, throws him over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes. The kid starts bawling and they huff and puff out, you know, making a scene.
Right, right.
Now, I'm a mutual of both of them, so, and I didn't even know this whole scene was going on. I was chasing Carson around.
You're trying to find your parents, yeah.
Yeah, so I hear this after the fact, this big brouhaha that's happened. I do some damage control, but we're 9 days past this party, and they are not on speaking terms yet. So, a lot of bad blood. So, who do you think was in the right in that situation?
Neither.
The kid wasn't sick either. I mean, that's after the fact. But.
All right. So I blame both sides of this one. So I would say, as soon as they're thrown up, even if he's probably not sick, I think the smart move is just to get out of there, just because you don't want to deal with the bullshit. And
right.
You make it up to the kid, take him to get ice. Like, I know it sucks to miss the party or whatever else, but it's probably the safest bet for everyone. But what I don't like is the reaction of people to that, because you already are feeling bad enough. And this kind of happened with my son a couple years ago, Christmas, he threw up. And
right.
Everyone's like, oh, you got to go get him out. You know, and it, like, you feel awful. For it. Like, and then it just makes you feel like bad. So I would blame then the parent for also like making it a thing, instead of maybe being a little bit more compassionate in the moment. And I know if you're saying it's on him and he wasn't getting pushed, then it's even more so.
Yeah, I mean, he was acting like oh, we're going to have to clean it up. You know, I mean, right, like, right. It wasn't like, you know, hazmat was coming in there and decontaminating right. the area. So, I thought both sides had some blame to carry, but I don't know. It was a bad situation. Also, the kid that threw up and the girl's party, their boyfriend and girlfriend, so a little added complication. Yeah. So
well, now it's a forbidden love. So
the lovebirds with their in-laws starting off fresh.
We have both my kids' combined party on Saturday. We have about 32 children in a bowling alley, so hopefully no one vomits at that. We'll see.
that's coming up, right, this Saturday?
This Saturday, yeah.
So. How many birthday parties are you having for your daughter?
I feel like ridiculous.
Every time I pull up
Facebook, fucking absurd. She's had more birthday goddamn celebrations.
They say she's blowing out a candle already. Is she going to be one of these? It's my birthday month.
she's very entitled already. Well, it's not because by doing the joint parties, you're...
Right.
You know, like, you can't, you feel that screwing you, because we did this last year, we had the party closer to her birthday, and for his, we ended up going out and do it. So it's like, you feel bad, like, not doing anything on their birthday. So because it was like a week after hers, we still, on Friday, and she's off, so it's even more so. Like, if she was in school, you know, she was off for February vacation, like, if she was in school, it'd be like, all right, just kind of a normal day, but you're just kind of sitting around all day as it is. So we were like, we went to the trampoline park.
Yeah.
And then we came home and, like, Don came over with his kids and we did, like, ice cream sundaes. So that was kind of, like, on her birthday. And then Saturday happened to be the PC game where we do the high five club. So, of course, we're doing the birthday wish and all that. You know, so it's, like, it's kind of baked in. And then the next day my mom had texted and was like, oh, we'd like to go to lunch, you know, and my sister is my daughter's godmother. She wanted to take her shopping for some stuff. So, yeah, so it's just like nonstop. And now here we go again on Saturday for the
Was that party. At that – did y'all go eat at that gimmick place that has all the
– So the Sugar Factory?
Yeah, Sugar Factory.
No, so we were planning to at Foxwoods. And this is a very Rhode Island thing, but it was like – we just didn't feel like making the drive. It's like a little under an hour there. But it's also – it was like pouring. Lord. Well, it was like nasty out Sunday morning. It was like really bad rain.
No excuse. Yeah, no excuse.
But fuck that. I didn't feel like going to the fucking casino. And it's a pain in the ass with two kids. It's like in the middle of the casino floor. It's not like it's just a standalone place. So it's like a fiasco. You park in the garage. You take the elevator up. So it's, you know, it's a whole thing. So we ended up going to BJ's Brew House locally here, and they went to the mall. So it was good.
From the sugar factory to BJ's Brew House. sounds like Bob Kraft's weekend.
I had a delicious root beer float.
Okay. All right. So there you have it.
By the way, my neighbor apparently has deleted his Facebook. The last remnants of our interactions were him and me going at it about the Patriots being a dirty franchise. So I don't know if I'm fully to blame or if he was already on edge. You guys have to ask him tomorrow.
That was last week. I kind of ignore all Patriot Facebook banter.
Yeah, that was we'll have to see if that's why.
I got enough problems with Braves Twitter. Braves Twitter is hot and heavy now.
I don't know if I'm like the sole reason he bailed. Like at first I thought maybe I was blocked because, you know, all of a sudden I noticed. The only reason I even noticed is because Jeff commented on the post and I noticed all the comments are gone, the conversation with me and my neighbor. Nice. So I'm like, oh shit, did he block me? And I'm looking, but when I looked at his wife's page, his name shows up as just grayed out. And I think when you get blocked, it shows as like with the little X, like you can't message the person. Grayed out usually means they don't exist on Facebook anymore, in my experience. So I think he actually deleted his account.
I mean, you've been blocked more on Facebook than Twitter, or you think you've been blocked?
I don't think I've really been blocked. I'm not too I don't get too much on Twitter. It's Facebook, I've definitely. Jeff alone has unfriended me at least 4 or 5 times.
Good Lord. Over that. All right, you ready to dive into these great shows tonight?
Yeah, and then we could talk about Braves banter on Breaking Balls.
Well, it's just, I mean, the quick and dirty of that is just like wrestling Twitter. I mean, right. you have your. There's a podcast. We're in the podcast war. So I mean, I'd say like the most prominent Braves blog is Talking Chop. It's now run by SB Nation, but it's been around forever. And they're obviously Saber based, and I kind of equate them to like the Voices of Wrestling. And then you have another podcast upstart called Nakahama. Nation, which is they're more like, you know, clubhouse mentality means a lot. They're very pro Nick Markakis, so
a lot of Venom Bites.
Yeah, a lot of a little Frey movement is probably the greatest comparison. So as you can imagine, it's been quite a delight on Braves Twitter, especially if
awful.
Especially if Harper ends up taking like a 5-year deal with the Dodgers, right. That's going to be the apocalypse. Because I think you could justify, like, I mean, 10 years, $325. I mean, that is a lot of capital to move forward. But I mean, if he does like a 5 or 4, you know, 5-year, $190 or something like that, then it's like you got no excuse.
Right. Right. No. So. No team does really.
Yeah, we'll see.
You can check back to last month's great debate to hear me kicking off that topic that's now hot amongst the internet and baseball writers. So, yeah. You heard it here first. Voice of Nation pop feed. All right.
Check out this month's great debate to hear 1970 sports talking points. Soccer sucks, guys.
All right. Speaking of losers from Atlanta, let's turn our attention to WCW. We are in Charlotte. Woo! By God, North Carolina.
Wait, time out. Losers from Atlanta? Well, how about losers from New York? It was list of the Jets.
We're talking baseball.
We're talking WCW first, but all right.
You got all
a homecoming for Ric Flair.
Stopped all of my Charlotte there. But I nailed it.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. So here we are, December 11th, 1995 Nitro. This is what happens when we take months off at a time. We're getting lost. We're right into the show and flying, but here we are.
Plus I worked from home today, so I literally didn't talk for like 10 hours. Yeah, so I'm pent up. Busting at the seams here.
Trying to get it all off your chest. Okay. It's fine. It's fine. I'm here. All right. So anyway, December 11th, 1995 Nitro. We're going to go there. We are in Charlotte. Chad, take us away.
Woo! We're in Charlotte tonight. Homecoming for Ric Flair. Is today his actual 70th birthday?
Yeah, today tonight is.
So today it is. Happy birthday. I mean, you look at Flair, he does look older than 70.
Oh, he looks like shit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he looked pretty ancient on his birthday party. I mean, my grandfather's 89. He looked about the same age as Flair.
But when you factor in what Flair's done in his life,
yeah,
it's probably
impressive. I mean, he's probably lived like 150-year-old at this point. Right, so, right, yeah, right. I mean, he's still hanging on, yeah. Guess. at least has some semi... the lights are still semi-on up there.
Well, this is how he doesn't pull a Warrior. We're going to have this big Raw moment, and then tomorrow night we're getting a Triple H tweet.
Oh, hey, here's another quick sidebar. So, Caden was watching WrestleMania 30 this weekend, and Warrior came out, and I had to try to quickly explain like what happened there.
Right.
Because, of course, he came out, and the first thing Caden said was, it's the Texas Tornado. So right.
He's buying the rumors.
He's propelling that theory.
He's stuck in 92.
Because he has he plays with my Texas Tornado figure a lot. But no, awesome. I was like, no, that's the Ultimate Warrior.
You should show him like, the old WWF magazine picture where everyone thought it was Tornado.
Right, right. Yeah, I should have done a comparison.
I'll scare it out of you.
But when the Warrior comes out, the first thing he says is, oh, he's old. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, this is a long time after the matches you have been watching, which concept of time for a 4.5-year-old is it's a tough thing to explain. And then he was like, and then I tried to explain, he was like, well, is the Ultimate Warrior still wrestling? And I was like, well, no, actually, about 48 hours after this, he died. So that was fun.
Still one of the most bizarre things ever.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, so we're in Charlotte. Pepe has on the leather chap, so he's into it tonight for I guess some BDSM. I
ready to get it in.
Yeah, yeah. An homage to Flair with the leather get up, and they basically talk us into the show, and we kind of go pretty abruptly to our first match.
Mm-hmm.
First match looks good on paper. We hadn't seen this guy in a while. He's been one of our favorites for the run of the show. Eddie Guerrero versus Mr. JL, of course, Jerry Lynn. Now, I should have looked this up, but I don't think we'll see Mr. JL too much longer after this. Do you? You're a little bit ahead. Do you remember him cropping up anymore? Or?
I don't remember if he shows up for us, but I do know... He is around, like, into 96, I think, is, like, job duty. But I believe this might be it for... Oh, no, we see him one more time.
Okay. So we still get a little bit of a little more Mr. JL, but he's certainly on the downswing. But this looked like a pretty good opener on paper. It was good to see Eddie back. And then I like they did, like, a neat touch with the announcer saying, like, the wrestlers couldn't wait to start.
Yeah.
So they like started right in with the collar and elbow tie up.
Mm-hmm.
Saito suplex from Eddie. Bobby says that Japanese wrestlers were already training in the Smoky Mountains.
Yes.
For the Starrcade. Now, I'm sure you're not too well versed on your Tennessee geography, but the Smoky Mountains in Nashville, where Starrcade emanates from, are not very close. It's kind of like saying if, in Albany for Royal Rumble 1992, they were in the Big Apple, sort of that type of equivalent.
I'll give him credit for trying. I do think it was a good point. It wasn't the usual Bobby bloviating, like, bullshit. I thought it was actually a pretty sharp point to say, like, WCW guys are traveling, but guess what? The New Japan contingent's already here. They're already training locally. They're getting a jump. They're ready for Starrcade. They're avoiding the jet lag and all that. So I thought that was pretty well done.
Two and a half weeks ahead of time. That's really a big.
They're in the dojo. So it's 227 miles, about 3.5 hours away.
Right. Yeah. We're kind of in the middle of both of them, so it's about 4 hours from where I live either way.
Do you think that was like a low-key dig at like Smoky Mountain Wrestling, or do you think he just happened to pick it?
I didn't think about that. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, I think we saw in the Observer, like they just closed down like a week or two before, so they're gone. He does predict Japanese will win the World Cup, so no shock there. Eddie catches JL in an inverted atomic drop, but then Mr. JL gains the advantage by getting a head scissors, sending Eddie to the outside. He puts Eddie up on the top rope and hits his drop kick, which Eddie again spills to the outside off that. Now Eddie's on the outside, and Mr. JL does a running tope con hilo into the entranceway. That looked very good. We get our first Where the Big Boys Play from Eric on the night, and then we hear that Eddie is going to face Otani at Starrcade, which, you know, has a match that has a little bit of a reputation, and, you know, it's for your smart fans, that was a very salivating match when they announced that here. And then we go right to the finish where Eddie is able to get a quick reversal and a sunset flip for the pin. So I thought this was a really fun sprint to kick us off tonight. Mm-hmm. Good to have Eddie back in the saddle. He kind of in his customary pretty good to good match that you can rely upon him for. And so I went 2.5 stars here.
Yeah, I went 2.75. I dug it. A lot of Starrcade World Cup talk. You mentioned the Smoky Mountains, but they're talking about it even beyond that. And this is a good match because you're really trying to – Guerrero's already been the Nitro workhorse like we've talked about, but you're really trying to showcase him and get him over because he's part of the Best of Seven World Cup. So you're really trying to establish him. So this is a nice quality win on TV. JL's a guy that they've proven can go with anyone. And, yeah, it has worked as a sprint. Eddie wins clean. So I thought this was well done to get Eddie prepped for Starrcade, and he looks good as always. He's been one of the MVPs like we talk about every episode.
So there we go. Good, nice opener. Mongo says Eddie has superstar and champion written all over him, which was Mongo really seems to like Eddie. We keep mentioning that. But both him and Bobby, they definitely give Eddie props on commentary, which is nice to see. Then we get an interview with Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger with Mean Gene. Mean Gene asked Jimmy if Spike Lee or Spike Jones dresses him. I didn't quite get that reference. Do you have any insight on that one?
No. Okay. I got nothing.
I don't know if I was missing something or what. I mean, does Gene think both of them are blind or have no fashion?
Yeah, I guess maybe they dress shitty.
No fashion sense. Okay. I don't really know what Spike Jones's style.
Could he mean that they're wearing black all the time and those guys are black? Is that what he
means? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, Jimmy says Luger is the uncrowned champ. We then see clips of Havoc in World War III with Luger beating up Savage. Luger says he could have taken Macho's arm off his body if it wasn't for Sting. So kind of your basic Luger promo, but still setting up the feud with him and Savage here.
Yeah, again, focuses on the complexities, the friendship with Sting, a lot of basic stuff. You know, he says that last week, you know, Hogan basically prevented him from being champ. So I think this is another good promo. And again, we're kind of back to back with some of our MVPs of Nitro. We have Eddie and Luger, who's been really good since he's arrived from the WWF. You know, shaky here and there in the ring, but really good from a character standpoint. And I thought this was nicely pushing, again, him and Sting. We'll see more of that really play out through the end of the year.
Right. And that leads us right into our second match of the night, which is Jay Hinchy's favorite wrestler, Disco Inferno, as he faces, who did he face here? Mr. Wonderful. Screen flipped here. let me pull the DVD off the shelf and I read the back. Mr. Wonderful has his mirror and Bobby compliments singing. So this is kind of, I think if you think of late era Mr. Wonderful, this is probably one of his biggest nights, as we'll see.
Yes.
Kind of in this gimmick as he's in full, you know, wonderful regalia here, coming out, getting the crowd warmed up. He's kind of in a weird, what would you say, heel face? I mean, it's kind of a weird tweener type character.
Yeah,
that we see from here tonight.
They both are, really. Because Disco's kind of been a heel, but he also faces other heels. It's weird. Yeah. No, Orndorff, I think, he's pretty much been a heel since. And so it almost is like, I don't think he's a tweener. I think he's a heel that is turned face in a minute.
Okay. And we're seeing the turn.
Yeah.
I did like, before he gets into the ring, he puts the ring girls there with Disco's jacket. And Mr. Wonderful puts the mirror up to his ass. So you can see, like, the, I guess, his ass in the mirror's reflection. And then he looks at the ring girl, like, shaking his head, nodding approvingly, like, oh, you want a piece of that, honey? The ring girl looks like she's just been sexually, well, I mean, she pretty much has, but.
Everyone loves a 52-year-old wrinkled, fucking roided up, shriveled guy's ass.
Like, I don't know if one cheek's smaller than the other one, but. There you go.
One testicle smaller, the left one.
Yeah. So this was kind of a interesting match, I guess, on paper. A Disco attacks before Orndorff can take his robe off. Orndorff fires back with punches, atomic drop, and an elbow. Crowd, as I mentioned, is a little unsure who to cheer for here. And so pretty quick match, back and forth, meat and potato type affair. There was a nice moment right before the finish where Mr. Wonderful goes for like his elbow drop, yes, and he starts dancing and right, gyrating. I mean, it really has to be seen to believe. It is like,
see, now,
drunk grandpa at a wedding.
And I thought that was like him mocking Disco, but I think he was doing that in general in this era. Like, I remember him doing it beyond this match too, where he does like this little weird like knee wiggle shit. It's like, dude, love like even more spastic.
Yeah, it's like a dude love mixed with Macho Man pointing, you know, his hand up in the right air, like the
it was
finger
really
wave. It is quite a little jig that Mr. Wonderful gives us. But he ends up picking up the Duke here off of a back suplex that actually looked good. Like, yeah. Disco folds up pretty good. So like I said, I mean, a quick match. It was inoffensive. I ended up going a kind of weird rating, star and a quarter. Mm-hmm. You don't get many of those, but that's where I landed here.
I went two on this.
I
thought, well, I mean, God, this is where we're at. You're like, oh, two stars. Jesus. All right. So Bischoff talks about Disco only cares about his booty and his hair when he was coming out. And Bobby gushes over the Wonderful theme and says it's Mean Gene singing while sitting on a block of ice. The theme. So we get some talk about Sting not responding to Hogan, who's knocking on his locker room door. So they're trying to signal some trouble later tonight for the main event. And I like that, the visual of Hogan. Come on, brother, banging on the door. Oh, he's not listening to me, Randy. Yeah, and then I really like the tight back suplex, too. That was really stiff. I like that. But not much doing. It was fine. Executed fine. Orndorff is really, really aimless, at least up until about 2 minutes from now.
Yeah.
He was coming across as pretty aimless. And the one thing I will say about WCW's matchmaking tendencies, I did appreciate how they didn't seem to give a shit half the time about faces heel alignment. Like, they would just make matches. So it felt more believable in some ways. Like, all right, these are two guys kind of working up the ladder. We're going to match them up and let them go at it. Like, why does it always have to be a face and a heel? Like, why can't it just be like this, where it's just two guys jockeying for position on the card and they go out there and they get a 3-minute match to see who can move up? And I feel like they would do much more of that than the WWF did at this time and before this.
Right, yeah. Yeah, WCW does Ring of Honor better than Ring of Honor. So then we get our Horseman interview. Mm-hmm. So, of course, awesome. A big reaction for them. Flair gets the homecoming reaction. But as we see in this interview, the mouthpiece is almost entirely Brian Pillman. And he is off the rails tonight. So I like the Horseman shirts. We have those. I don't know if we'd seen those before. There's another Scott reference. Did they have the APA shirts by this point in time, or the Hell's Henchmen, or was that
always pounding ass?
Yeah. So, Pillman says it's a chance to be a part of the greatest dynasty of sports.
Chance of a lifetime.
Hogan wanted to be a Horseman when he went through his Black era. I mean, this is probably in your wheelhouse, oh, right? With Brian Pillman. Yes. I figured watching this, you'd be all over it.
We're the true bad guys.
G cuts him off at one time. Pillman shuts that up quickly. Tells him not to cut him off. G's wearing a bow tie today.
Yeah,
he's so dressed
up. Gussied up for the big match tonight.
Dressed up for the big occasion.
Pillman also calls out Mongo for all his tough talk too, and then he shits on Dungeon of Doom and Paul Orndorff. So.
Yeah, yeah. He's sparing no one with this tongue-lashing promo. Flair then talks and kind of reins things back in a little bit. The crowd really explodes for him. And then we get Orndorff coming out. So he was a little pissed at what Pillman had to say. He calls Pillman a punk after he insulted him. He says, Orndorff says he could have been a horseman if he wanted to. And he says all that Pillman does is carry people's bags. So some heavy shots from Mr. Wonderful here.
Yeah, and he puts over Flair and Arn. He says they're, you know, he's paying respect to them, but Pillman's a punk.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was pretty good where, you know, like these veteran guys and you have Pillman who's kind of like the cocky young punk of the team that, you know, probably mouths off too much, according to Flair and Arn, but their team. So, as we see, like, Pillman gets riled up and ends up slapping Orndorff. And then because horsemen stick together, they end up joining in the attack. And they really attack Mr. Wonderful here. I'd forgotten all about this.
Yeah, it was good.
And it was really well done. They end up giving Orndorff a spike pile driver on the floor. I thought Orndorff sold it well. He's laid out. We get Somber, Eric, you know, and Bobby talking about the neck. That is where I think Bobby's always good on commentary because of his legit neck problems.
Right.
He can always kind of rely on that real world experience to talk about, oh, you know, I know that. How much, you know, your neck means to you and how many problems you can have when your neck hurts and so forth. So a really well done angle and kind of forgotten one for the Nitro area. I think in these, you know, these early 95, 96 Nitros, you may remember some of the corny stuff, but, this is a good one to go back and watch, you know, a well done angle that you don't really think about, but really showed the horsemen sticking together and gave them solidarity to this unit. I would have liked Benoit out there. I think that was the only thing that was kind of missing from this.
I think he was bouncing around a lot at this point. Wasn't he like in Japan sometimes? And back
yeah,
here?
I mean, and actually, let me see. I don't think he was in the 95 Super J Cup, but let me see when that actually took place.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Super J Cup 95 actually took place December 13th.
So he may have been over
so there. It's the night after this, but I'm almost positive Benoit was not in that one.
All right. Yeah, I thought he was splitting time for a bit because he's on and off a lot, like in late 95 into early 96. It's not really until like springish when he starts. I feel like when he starts like really being on consistently, he was kind of MIA a lot in these early Horseman days. There's not a ton of like him and Pillman together because I feel like he's off a lot. But I liked Orndorff. His selling was so good because he sells it like he's dead. Like he's not twitching or, you know, like screaming or like all scared. Like he just was like just fucking out, like out cold. And then eventually kind of wakes up and he's, you know, stretched out. But they put the brace on his neck and everything, the head cushion. And I like
the point. I'm sorry. He was in the J Cup. He was in the J Cup.
Yeah, he was. Okay.
I knew he was. Yeah. So that's where he was. He's in Japan.
That makes sense. Yeah, so I like that, and I like your point earlier, too, about how kind of the old vets are like have this mutual kind of understanding. Like, they go way back. Like, he's like two old gunslingers, like, you know, I'm not fucking with you, you're not fucking with me. We kind of we coexist here, we're not friends, but we have this healthy respect of each other. But if your buddy keeps running his fucking mouth, I'm going to take you all out. You know, so it was almost something like that, and that's why I don't think he was a tweener. I think it was just two old-school heel, or, you know, whatever, three old-school heels, in order to just get punked out because, you know, Pillman had the backup and they had a back the boys up. And I like to they tease it where Pillman slaps him and Arn and Flair kind of break it up and then turn and start stomping on Paul. It's like that's when they kind of – they almost tease that they weren't going to go for it and then they do. And I thought this was needed too because the Horsemen, they've been presented well, obviously, because they're really good. But they haven't really had like this vicious attack yet. We've seen them fuck over Sting, but that was almost – I don't want to say comedic, but that was almost like, oh, like how, like we knew it was coming. This like comes out of nowhere, and it's almost a throwback to the old evil horsemen where like, they just beat the shit out of guys, you know, breaking wrists and car doors and everything. So I thought like this was really well done for them to just take this guy who really had no issue with them until Pillman called him out and just like drop him in the streets, right? I mean, it's just like a random passerby, you know, walking down the street and gets shot because he crossed the wrong gang at the wrong time.
Right.
So that's what it felt like, is it's like this old, you know, old warrior that they're friendly with just happened to be at the wrong place, wrong time. He didn't keep his mouth shut and mouthed it off, and they had to lay him out. So I thought it was really good. It was well done. It was an excellent segment, probably one of the best we've seen on Nitro. And I thought Pillman was just fantastic in the whole thing. Like, you could see why Orndorff, like, couldn't hold back and just got in his face. Like, he was such a fucking prick. You're just like, shut this fucking guy up. And it's cool because it's been a running theme, and it continues to be that, like, they can't control him. He's just this rabid dog. But he's so good that they want him in the Horsemen, but they can't. They have, like, no reign over him because he's nuts. And I think it's been kind of a cool story of Pillman's run. It's different than any of the other Horsemen stories we've had since they've debuted. They've always kind of either been cool or collected, or they've had the young muscle. We haven't really had, not that I can think of, right? They haven't really had like a loose cannon, out of control guy that, you know, they're trying to rein in throughout the whole time.
Do you think this was in any way a response to the Shawn Michaels stuff? That they did, you know, like an injury angle like this, or?
Maybe. Yeah, I could see him doing it almost in a mocking fashion more than, like, a response. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, oh, look, we can do it too. Make it just as believable. So maybe a little bit. I think it was more so just to get over the Horsemen as assholes. And, you know, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think they were setting Orndorff up for a little bit of a face run, too. I don't know. I'm not sure if it ends up going anywhere, but it wouldn't shock me if they had plans for him to come back and, like, be part of, like, the face contingent against the Horsemen at some point.
Right. So Eric says he's never seen Bobby have such emotion. Mongo brings up that he managed Orndorff. And then Bobby comes back to the booth, says it doesn't look good, and noises are coming out of him. So really well done. Then we get our WCW Saturday Night rundown. Mm-hmm. Pretty big show coming up. Sergeant Craig Pittman versus Sting. Brian Pillman versus Johnny B. Badd, which, you know, that could be fun. Yeah, right. And Alex Wright versus Buckhouse Buck, which sounds oddly intriguing. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie Guerrero in singles action, no opponent for him. But that's what's coming up on Saturday. Pretty good show, actually, for Saturday night.
You have to check out Monsoon Classic and see if that one's out there anywhere.
Yeah, maybe. Then that leads us into our next match, which is Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Lex Luger. This is kind of just like a forward moving match. They sort of split between this match and showing clips of Orndorff getting stretchered out, loaded up, and everything. Another match that was almost consisted entirely of punches, elbows, and clothesline. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we talked about, Duggan looks fat as shit now. I mean, looks really bloated and just not bringing much to the table. Duggan tapes up his fist, hearts on the apron with the 2x4. Then Luger hits him from behind, and Duggan's head hits the 2x4 board. And then Luger is able to rack him to pick up the win. Now, Eric has some shots once Luger racks Duggan that, you know, hey, Chono, are you watching? This is what's going to happen to you at Starrcade.
Right.
So they're again setting up the World Cup there. So that was pretty well done. But mm-hmm. as a match, it was basically to help get Luger over a little bit. I ended up going a star here.
I went another robust, too. It's just kind of my default for these fine matches. I mean, it was fine. I thought the heat was pretty good. And I thought the rack was actually really impressive. Like, I don't want to undersell. Duggan was fucking fat load. And Luger, like, almost just about deadlifts him up and holds him there. Yeah. Like, I thought it looked really cool. Like, that was I bumped it for that. That was a kind of a highlight moment that you don't... Like, he ends up doing bigger racks to bigger guys. But at this point, we haven't really seen those. I thought this was a really, really cool one. To see him hoist Duggan up like that, like deadlift him.
The technique here, it looks like he was picking him up more. Where,
for sure.
With some of the bigger guys, he ranks like Giant and right. Nash. I mean, it's impressive that he gets them up, but there's also a little bit of like you can almost see them leaning on his back, you know, a little bit.
Well,
like he's
not
deadlifting
them too.
Up.
So he's not picking them up per se. They're just kind of going over his shoulders, and then he's turning.
Right.
With Duggan, yeah, he is, like, deadlifting him off the ground. I thought it was just a really cool, kind of underrated moment when he hoists him up. Heenan says, Arn and Flair aren't done tonight. He calls Duggan a blue-collar buffoon, which I thought was funny. And I thought they – excuse me. Goddamn. I thought they did a nice job not overdoing the Orndorff stuff. They kind of – they kept showing you because it was a big deal, but they weren't, like, ham-fisted or overly overbearing with it.
And right.
So they did a good job of – just kind of blending it in and like, all right, this is happening. We can't stop the show, but we also can't not comment on it. This guy's basically dead next to us getting carted off. So I thought they did a nice job of mixing the two.
Yeah, it was another good segment. I mean, certainly not a great match, but it was effective. Then we get a Mean Gene interview with Savage. Gene's been pretty busy tonight. So Gene runs down all the matches Macho has coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They announce him versus the Giant next week for the belt. Savage says he's never felt power like that before, except with Andre.
His dad.
And then Jeans does say it runs in the family.
Still going. Here I cannot believe it's been this long. I thought it was like 3 weeks and done with the Hogan, with the Andre stuff. I mean,
So, this is, again, a little basic advancement, but they're really playing up that Savage is, like, taxed.
Right. Yes.
Like, he's kind of running on empty, has the bad arm and is still doing all these matches, has all this stuff coming up. Really, at Starrcade, too. I mean, he's in the World Cup and he's defending the belt. So, just a lot going on for the Macho Man.
Yeah. Yep. No, this is another good promo, too.
And then we get a very lengthy main event.
Yes.
And, it's a juicy one on paper,
mm-hmm.
of Ric Flair, Arn Anderson versus Sting and Hulk Hogan. So, I mean, there you go. I mean, this definitely, at bare minimum, could have main evented a Clash. I mean, it could have main evented a pay-per-view.
Oh,
I mean,
for sure.
Certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a huge match. Of course, Eric busts out another Where the Big Boys Play for this one. the only live wrestling show weekly, so we got that in, the usual plugs here. Again, when Sting comes out, they talk about how, you know, Eric says, oh, he's making me nervous with how he's acting.
Right.
A lot of paranoia for Sting, and I don't understand what he's really done. Like, what all, I mean, he whispered in Luger's ear one time, and, I definitely feel like they're being way too mistrustful of Sting too quick here.
It's one of my criticisms of
we've seen.
It's definitely one of my criticisms of Bischoff as a commentator. Like he does go over the top with a lot of the stuff, and like it's a constant like hand wringing and worrying. It's, you know what I mean, it's like it just, I don't know. Like when you contrast that with Vince, who almost like kind of commands the show and is like. You wouldn't see him like crying like that. You know what I mean? Like Bischoff is almost in tears over like Sting doing this to the kids and everything else. Like it's just too much. It just makes it like, oh, just shut up. Like it's wrestling, you know? It's like stop.
Yeah, yeah. Crying. Eric's having his kind of own morality play with himself here over what Sting's gonna do. And again, I mean, we haven't seen really anything. I mean, I'd say Luger's definitely more nuanced than Sting so far in this kind of role they're playing. So I don't know. But
and Bischoff does also mention this quick. If Giant beats Savage this week, Savage is out of the title situation. It's dark altogether.
Right,
so
right.
He'll be
He's
out
locked out.
Three-way, yeah.
Hogan comes out, and we talked about a couple weeks ago. Hogan got a good series of boos in that match with Hugh Morris.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had to know that he was going to get booed here. Like, I mean, don't you think? Like, I mean, surely they knew in Charlotte versus Flair. I mean, I don't. Maybe they didn't know to the extent, but I mean,
right.
I would think they knew it was going to be bad, and it was bad. I mean,
yeah,
it was
Hogan this sucks was, chance right to the yeah. right from the start.
Right. This is even worse than a couple of weeks ago.
And the intro is weird too, where Hogan comes out, but like Sting's music's playing, and he's stomping all around, confused.
That yeah, he kind of staggers out
yeah.
like after the fact. Like Sting's almost in the ring, and
right.
then you see Hogan kind of walks. I wonder if they did that just so his music wouldn't play and he'd get booed. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they kind of thought they could sort of sneak in down there, but that didn't work. So then we get to our match. Arn Anderson and Sting start us off. Arn gets the advantage and then gloats about it in typical Arn fashion. Another big Hogan sucks chant with him just on the apron. The crowd does cheer Sting for the most part when he power slams Arn. Hogan gets tagged in for the first time, gets booed like crazy. They make a point that there was like no communication between Hogan and
right.
Sting.
Yeah, Bischoff really hammers at home. He's like no eye contact, no nothing. That they're not even looking at each other. And it's
right.
Before, at one point, I like to Bobby says everyone here is like intertwined with Sting, the Dungeon of Doom, the Horseman. But at the end of the day, Hogan has no friends. I thought that was like a really good point as they continue to tell the story where like no one's trusting anyone and Hogan's kind of on an island.
So then Flair and Hogan. End up locking up. Flair, of course, is over hugely. Flair chops Hogan. He no-sells. Arn attacks Hogan from behind to cheers. And then Hogan no-sells that and takes Arn out. Sting comes back in. He's working with Flair on the floor and sends him back in. Flair goes to the eyes. And then against Sting, and we get your typical Sting Flair exchanges that we talked about, where Sting power slams him. Eric's voice at this point starts to go out.
Yeah,
he gets very hoarse.
And I actually thought the commentary was good though and focused throughout this match. They're talking about Savage's injuries. They're talking about all the relationships. Talking about Starrcade. Like, I thought they're doing a nice job weaving it in. Like, they're not ignoring the match like you get a lot of times with Nitro, but they're weaving it in to the match, which I thought was well done.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a little match. This goes about 14 minutes. Mm-hmm. We end up, the Heat, of course, ends up coming on to Stink. So they start going after Sting, where that came off an Arn DDT, which looked really good when he had Flair and the Scorpion deathlock. Yes. So that was a nice transition spot. Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger come out to ringside. Luger goes after Hogan and posts him and then racks him on the floor. So, as you talked about, there's a lot of intertwining.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost kind of like the 3 months of story is kind of building to this match, from what we've seen pretty much since the show started. So they're working over Sting. He's getting picked apart by the Horsemen. Some good hope spots there. Flair applies to figure four. Sting is able to fight out of that. He tags Hogan, but the ref doesn't see it. And then they ask the crowd. The crowd actually says no, which was hilarious.
Poor Sting.
Bobby says everybody needs to be fair to Flair. Tags made to Hogan. No pop. He runs through his gambit of a comeback.
No sells a spine buster.
Yes. Completely no sells a spine buster. Big boots for both. And then the leg drop to Arn and Sting is a Stinger splash and Flair in the corner. And then Hogan pins him. Immediately, Brian Pillman attacks. I mean, as soon as the three drops, Brian Pillman comes in. And then I guess we can talk about the post-match.
We get
a dust up and, of course, our ending interview segment. But
let's talk about the dust up because I kind of count that as part of the match, and then we'll get to the interview.
So Pillman comes in, attacks. Luger actually goes after Pillman, tells him to attack Hogan, not Sting, which is a nice point. And then Luger tells Sting not to help out Hogan, kind of keeps him at bay. So Sting, you know, kind of lays out both, doesn't listen to him, and Luger sort of is disgusted at that and just sort of stomps off. Him and Jimmy just bolt. Savage comes in to help, and then Sting ends up sucker. It wasn't really a sucker punch. It's kind of like Sting was just swinging and maybe didn't necessarily know that Macho was there. So Sting hits him. Hogan's trying to play the peacekeeper between the two. And then we get our interview segment. You want to go ahead and run through that?
We can just talk about the match just overall first before we get to the interview. I thought the post-match was really good. I thought the leg beating of Sting during the Heat segment was classic Horseman. I thought that was well worked. I like the Luger stuff. And I'm a big mark when they have all these big main event guys intertwined that isn't just a singular feud. I like when Dirty F does it later. I like WCW doing it here. We have all these top dogs. They're all gunning for the belt. There's some loose alliances. There's some tight friendships, but they're all having issues. And week to week, they're all fighting each other across the board. So I thought it's really been well done. Savage hates Luger. Luger and Sting are buddies. Sting hates, Flair. Flair hates Hogan. It's they're all kind of, and then you got the Judge of Doom lurking. You got the Giant in there. I guess this is a big mishmash of guys. And on top of it now, they all have to fend off the Japanese invasion. So, I think it's all been pretty well done where you have just the shit coming from all sides for all these guys. And I really liked the match. I thought, paint by numbers at times. But like you said, it could have easily... It screamed Clash main event because I went 3.25. It felt very much just like a real strong TV main event with the opening chime, the Heat, and then the finish. It just felt like a Saturday night's main event / Clash type of match to me, more than even than the pay-per-view. But, I don't know. How would you compare this to, say, the In Your House 3 main event?
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. I ended up going 3 stars, but I think it's in the same ballpark. Talking it out and talking about kind of the complexities and the intertwining, mm-hmm. I think I got a better appreciation just describing kind of how complicated it was and how they kind of moved everything along.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of moving parts here, and they hit almost all the right notes, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, even with Hogan being booed, I mean, that's probably the most glaring thing where, like, your top babyface is getting booed. But it's kind of a little bit of a like a predecessor of what we'll see with Hart.
Right.
And Austin and the Canada US stuff, where I mean, just kind of like, well, I mean, we're in Flair's hometown, so he's going to get cheered. So let's just roll with it, I guess, a little bit. I mean, I think they were a little tone deaf with how Hogan just no sold everything. Like, that annoyed me watching the match where, you know, no sells the spine buster, you know, the typical, like, complete garbage where he just completely no sells stuff. But overall, it's very effective.
No, yeah, I agree. It was a really good segment. And I think that the comp Daniel's 3 may be a good one because you went 3 and I went 3.25 on that one.
There we go.
Yeah, pretty dead on. So I have this earmarked as a potential hidden gem, but you only went 3, so we'll leave it off. But, you know, it was
worth
borderline.
Seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, worth seeing.
Yeah, it's a fun match. It's kind of a forgotten one, too. Like, historically cool to have those four guys together. So it's, you know, one that's kind of been, like, you don't ever hear about. Like, I never see it on WCW.
Oh, yeah.
Comp,
well, I mean,
because
Savage ends up running in, and you kind of have Luger, who's a big name of the 80s and 90s. I mean, if you think from the Rock and Wrestling era to the Attitude era, mm-hmm. that bridge, I mean, this is, at least between Hogan, Sting, and Flair, probably three of the six or seven biggest guys, and yeah. Savage, too.
Easy.
I mean, so a ton of star power here. Mm-hmm. Then we get our interview. There's a moment in the interview where the right as the interview is about to take place, the guy in the front row, he stands up, he turns and faces the hard cam. He has a Hogan shirt, and he rips it right in half. he makes a big, like, scene and just rips the shirt in half. It's just very amusing. You have to kind of watch for it, but it was great. So, you know, kind of your basic interview we've seen with these three. They're all questioning each other. They don't really trust each other. Savage says he wants Sting to stay with them. Hogan does a short promo to no reaction. Just still a lot of dissension here.
Yep.
Between them. And I think they go to break as Eric says they're going over, and then they come back with our quick roundup of the announcer. So a very action-packed show that, again, went about 54 minutes on the network. So,
yeah, so they spilled it.
They did the overrun.
Or they started early. And they might have started early. Remember they do that sometimes, too, where they come in like 2 or 3 minutes before 8 or 9, whatever it was.
Yeah, they may have done that. I just know right as they were going to break, Eric was like, we're running over.
Yeah, we're going
so
almost.
Stick
okay.
with us. So, yeah, so at least like it looks like the roundup with the announcers was after the 10 o'clock hour.
We get some of the usual stuff that we've gotten. You know, it's all working well. Savage says he hates Luger, and Sting needs to be straight up. Hogan says they have to fight the Horsemen, not each other. Sting says he shoved his best friend aside because he's fighting for his life, and that's what happened with Savage. Sting says he wishes he could take back what happened. Hogan says Sting saved his rear end, and they should cool down. And Hogan's just rambling about suspensions and Flair. Savage and Sting feels like so like real, and then you got Hogan's, you know, just fucking over the top rambling. Savage cools down. Sting says they're super cool. And Hogan says Savage has to get his act together for next week. Sting saved him tonight. So Hogan, it's almost like he's going overboard trying to get everyone to accept Sting saved us tonight, brother. It's like, shut up. Everyone's fine with Sting. It's you're the idiot. No, it was a really good Nitro, which will reflect in our awards, I think. So why don't we get to that?
All right. What did you have for match of the night, the main event here?
Yeah.
So I guess that's the streak of Eddie ending. His match wasn't bad, but I think the main event was the best one. Let me see here. What was your segment of the night?
The Horsemen beatdown.
Yeah, we had some contenders here between the post-match and that, but I went with the Orndorff Horseman Showdown as well. Overall MVP, also a lot of contenders here.
I went Pillman. I thought he was the star of that segment, and it all centered around him being a nut, and I thought he was just really good.
Yeah, I ended up going Flair, kind of his homecoming. Thought he was good in the tag match, good in the interview segment, but I just gave Flair the nod. Pillman was certainly annoying, though. I mean, I think he was, like, him being over the top helped progress the angle. You know, him being so prickly.
Right.
That's, I mean, like, it's almost like I didn't want to give him my MVP, so I guess it was pretty effective.
And he was good in the post-match, too, when he jumps in at the bell. Like, that was well-timed and made it seem like even more like a nut.
Any commentary lines that you didn't mention as we went through the stuff?
If any Japanese wrestlers think Eddie Guerrero is going to be a cakewalk, maybe a rice cakewalk, they've got something else coming.
Oh, God.
Eric.
There we go.
And we'll talk about that terrible menage a trois later, said Eric. I don't write down what that was in relation to.
Hello.
If you know Eric's rumored proclivities, that was a prescient statement. I didn't know any shots fired. But I think just the usuals. I think I'm so used to hearing them that I've read them now at this point.
Yeah, I think this was certainly a lesser version of that. Like I didn't note any Mongo, you know, stay right here. This is where the real action is, you know, not the JV, you know, kind of his usual rah-rah stuff. I didn't notice any of that.
No, it's almost like the categories. Like, it's just normal for Bischoff to say we're the only live show.
Live, yeah. I mean, that's very tame. Yeah. So I don't even classify that. The rating tonight was 2.6, which is the same as last week. Mm-hmm. They've been pretty consistent with the 2.6, 2.5. So they're staying steady, at least. No debuts, no dropped angles. So what was your final grade here?
I went 6.5. Which is a higher end TV for us. Like, I think I've peaked at 7 to this point for TV itself, and that was the Raw with Shawn collapsing. And I think I had a Nitro at a 7 as well. So 6.5 is pretty lofty for me for TV so far. So that was a really good show. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I'm guessing, I went 7 out of 10 for the Shawn collapse as well. I went 6 here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, just a good show. I mean, I thought this was a good show. Went by quick and, was just overall a good show. So
yep.
There's Nitro. Do we want to transition now into Raw?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Our last week at Richmond, Virginia. Finally.
Last time for Brother Nate to be in the house.
Last time these 4 week things here. So, we talked about how serious they were with the Orndorff thing. We get a completely cheesy open here.
Oh, yeah.
With Vince says the ER comes to the WWF as Backlund has an infectious disease with the cross-faced chicken wing. That was bad.
So what was ER's deal? Like, were they just named number one or something? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, why all of a sudden is he pouncing on ER? It's like they're really hammering it home. Like it's an episode of ER almost.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like some big episode may have happened. Like the previous Thursday, and they were like, "Hey, we watched that too." I don't know.
Maybe my 15th birthday, the episode "Home" aired, got a 35 million viewers, which is actually on the lower end for because they had been at 42 and 39 the weeks before. So,
did you ever watch
anything.
ER or no?
I was not an ER viewer. No, I don't think I've ever seen an episode of it.
I know I've seen like. Maybe just like off. I wonder if that would be any good to go back and rewatch. I don't know.
I think you probably find someone to do a podcast.
ER coming to the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Me and Atherton. He needs
the
a
ER
new
watch.
Podcast.
Yeah.
we'll probably put it like, we'll call it Third Shift or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I know there was that one episode where like nothing happens and at the end, it doesn't look like anything major happened here.
Yeah.
So I guess they're just
it's a hot show.
A hot show. It's the hot show. So we get our opening. Vince and JR, Vince and JR, Vince and King set us up, and then we get our first match. And I had forgotten about this. I mean, I knew one of these individuals did job duty, but
both of them.
Yeah, well, that's true. So it's Owen Hart versus Jeff Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Very young Jeff Hardy. Let me look up actually how old he was here. Was he 20 or was
he? Yeah, I know they started when they were like just 18, I think, jobbing, and that was 90. I think Matt first shows up in 94.
Yeah, Jeff was born August 31st, 1977, so he was 18.
Jeez. Is this his is this his first match? No, I guess not. It looks like Graham would note it, I think. So he must have been on already.
Yeah, I'll check cage match as you talk about that. But, yeah, I mean, just kind of crazy that, I mean, he was just in the Elimination Chamber now. And right. Here he was.
So Graham doesn't have it, but the first one in 95 he shows up is against Waylon Mercy on the 7-3 Raw. So that was Mercy's debut. It might have been Jeff's debut as well.
Cage match, is that right? Has him on a Raw in 1994 as Keith Davis.
Let's see, we got Matt Hardy. Yeah, Graham has it as well.
May 23rd, 1994.
Yep, Jeff Hardy loses to Razor Ramon as Keith Davis. I wonder if they kayfabed his name because of his age.
Yeah, he was 16.
And him and Matt.
Was he even 16 then? Yeah, he was 16.
Him and Matt were the guards at the door, if you remember King of the Ring.
I wonder if
he was just kind of around.
Yeah.
Because Matt does a little bit of job duty in 94 there. And then, yeah, so interesting. Wow, 16, he was fucking jobbing to Razor.
Yeah, and it looks like he was on a June Raw jobbing to Waylon Mercy.
Yeah.
Also on a August Raw jobbing to Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So, yeah, he's been on a couple of them so far.
Very cool.
I have not watched those, but there we go.
I can check out the rating I gave it, me and Scott, back in that
probably two stars. I mean, just a kind of fun match in retrospect, not much to it. And actuality is, of course, it's a squash. Jeff does get a hip toss. We do see Diesel watching backstage. And then Diana's in the crowd with the new haircut. I noticed she's got darker hair. Mm-hmm. And then a huge clothesline from Owen that Jeff took a big bump off of. So, I mean, he's definitely a great bumper, as we know. So he made Owen look good here. Missile drop kick from Owen, and Owen doesn't do the sharpshooter, but does a nice roll up. So, I mean, it was a 2-minute squash. I went a half star, but fun to watch.
Me and Scott both went dud on that Hardy Waylon Mercy match.
Oh, sad.
Owen is really hot now suddenly. Like, just completely, that whole concussion thing with Sean really heated him up big time. He's got Cornette, Fuji, and Yoko with him. And Vince talks about Diesel stepping off of that open challenge. He'll take on Owen at In Your House next week. So they start hyping that. Hardy gets a little bit of offense. I thought that was cool. King, you know, really starts talking about how Diesel can end up in a crumbled heap, just like Sean. So he's really putting over Owen as being dangerous, which was a nice touch because Owen's always been pushed as like a technical wizard, a high flyer, kind of a brat and a goof and a clown. We haven't really ever seen him positioned as like a dangerous, lethal wrestler. So this is almost kind of giving him a new, you know, profile in a way, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, gave him a little bit of an edge. So that was a good kind of new one. I mean, they could have probably fleshed that out more than they end up doing, but it's a nice touch right now from now until In Your House 6.
Yoko comes in after the match, hits the bonsai on Hardy, and then Hart gets the sharpshooter after the match. Diesel makes a save. Hart bails, and you get Diesel. Kind of a cool match, Diesel and Yoko.
Mm-hmm.
Diesel smacks him around, hits the big boot. So I thought that was kind of neat. It's one of those matches you always kind of wonder if they could have run out there on a pay-per-view in 95, like what it could have been like. And it definitely looked impressive to see the two of them out there.
Yeah, Diesel gave him the big boot. Oh, Yoko took a pretty good bump to the outside, and Diesel got a nice face reaction. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as we've seen, I think him changing his attitude, showing a little more edge, certainly helped him as well. So, overall, good job here.
I agree. I went quarter of a star.
Yeah. I mean, it was a squash, but effective. So, it served its purpose.
Yeah.
Our next match is Aja Khan versus Chaparita Sari. Mm-hmm. This is kind of it for the Joshi women, right?
Yeah, because they worked Survivor Series and then this taping. So
the night over.
Yeah. Nice treat. This is it. So was this our third match with the Japanese women? Because we had the Survivor Series, then we had the tag. Yeah. don't think so, we have anything else.
So we got kind of King says Aja's face reminds him of a bowling shoe. Which is just awful. He also, at one point, they Aja does a kick, mm-hmm. and I think this is actually probably a King line, but he says it was sort of a mule kick, and that's appropriate. So, I mean, just completely grating. Vince welcomes the new VR joining them in Canada, so I guess they got some new clearance. Yeah. And then also Vince is going to be on America Online tonight. So
yeah, and I looked it up. I don't think that's the infamous AOL chat. He has like a real famous one. I think that's a 96.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't like the real famous one that resurfaced years later from him. I think that's later. But this is a really early era Vince on the internet, so it's kind of cool.
He did say he would answer any question as honestly as possible. So there you have it. Kong gives a suplex, lifts up Asari, basically ragdolling her. Package pile driver from Kong, and she pulls her up on the pin. And then King says Kong and Fat Boy and ate potatoes together, which was I didn't get that reference. I mean, I got the reference.
He says,
but,
yeah, Fat Boy just died, he said. It was Kong's American hero.
Oh, Fat Boy just died.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's sad. So there we have it, where he got brought up. And then Aja starts dancing and taunting, and Vince says she learned that from Fat Boy. Aja misses the splash. Asari has a brief moment of hope, but she goes up top, tries to hit her sky twisting press. That catches the mat, and then Aja absolutely wastes her with the spinning back fist that you sent me a gif of today, which was just disgusting. Ends up winning. I win a star here. I mean, this was another basic squash. Definitely, as we talked about, looks like they could have done something with Aja. They just chose not to, and that's kind of a missed opportunity.
I went with the JT approved deuce here, 2 stars.
There we go.
Kong was just impressive. I mean, just really takes over the power and just really enjoyed beating Asari around, who they made stick around till the fourth hour of this taping just to get the shit kicked out of her, but it was fun. Yeah, King is ruthless here, and it's so annoying because Kong is such a beast and so impressive. You got him just making fat jokes, and she's not even fat. I mean, whatever. Like, I mean, yeah, she's not like a fucking model, but she's also like in pretty good athletic shape. So, and she probably beat the shit out of King if it came down to it.
Oh, yeah.
And Kong just swats down, anytime she goes for anything. King gets a note in about Sean, says it's time to hang it up before he becomes a vegetable if he keeps wrestling. Asari whiffs on the sky twister, so we get to see her break that out one more time. And then we get the nasty, nasty back fist, where Asari's nose is actually busted open and just looked completely out of it. So I think she really fucking crushed her with it because she looked like dazed afterward. I thought it was a great showcase for Kong. And she really could have been their next ace if they wanted it to be. And I don't think it's that they didn't want to do anything with her. I think Alundra doing what she does, which is obviously coming up,
right?
Really put a crimp in what their plans were going to be, and I think it just took the wind out of the sails. And in some ways, they almost forced their hand, because how can you now have the women's title resurface back? And how do you explain it? It says that you would have to ignore it, or do you acknowledge it? Like, I can see why he just hand waved it and said, "Fuck it, like forget it, like I'm done now." But I do think the plan was Alundra Kong into 96, because again, it was rumored for the Rumble. It wasn't even rumored, it was announced in their magazine. It's in the Rumble preview magazine. They had Alundra versus Kong listed, so it seemed like Kong was gonna be the next of the, you know, challenge Alundra, beat her, and then Alundra probably wins it back. So it seemed like they were going to repeat the formula with the third time. But no, so I can see why they didn't bother rolling forward when it's a little bit embarrassing as to what happens. So it sucks, because I think they should have said fuck it and just kept the working agreement with the All Japan women, brought them in once a month for the taping, and just worked through it with them. But they obviously don't want to do that.
All right. Then we got our interview with Shawn Michaels and Todd Pettengill.
Mm-hmm.
Todd is like a groupie. He's back. I mean, right. He was just way over the top.
He's at his DJ worst, yeah.
Yes. So Sean says he feels okay and wants to work towards coming back. Sean says he would come back today if he could, but the doctors don't agree with him. And then Sean says he will ignore authority like he usually does. he'll be back in the ring soon.
Todd here also mentions the internet, which is interesting that they're mentioning it more and more as like a thing. Like he says, the locker room, the internet, and beyond are talking about when Sean will be back. So it's interesting to me, like these early vestiges, like Vince on AOL, Todd mentioning the internet. Like it's interesting that we're in 95 and they're already kind of talking about it. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, and I think this is where we really start to see kind of the road to WrestleMania form. So Todd brings up he's not been WWF champion. Sean says, you know, he still has some goals left. And then the kind of the temperament of the interview changes when Todd talks about retirement. And Sean basically says, you know, we're not talking about that or even acknowledging that. So, you know, here we go. They're bringing that up, that he's never been WWF champion and setting the seeds for what's to come.
Yeah, yeah, and I do think as much as Todd was a cheerleader early, and could you just picture the first half of this interview as like a canned radio interview on like WPLJ, Shawn Michaels is with us,
yeah.
Where they just like chop it up into sound bites. Like it definitely felt like that. But I kind of liked where it takes the dark turn, where Todd basically says, you know, what's it like facing retirement? Sean just gets mad. He's like, you know, this is all about, you just want to get my reaction. You don't really give a shit.
Right.
You know, it must be easy for you sitting there. It's not your life. You know, it's not just a job. It means a lot to him. And he just walks out. I thought it was a weird ending, but I thought it was well done because down low, if you're paying attention, and I don't know if they were aiming for this or just as like a happy coincidence, you know, playing up the concussion stuff with the mood swings and the depression. Like, it's almost like he, when he's forced to face some level of reality, he just goes dark and like moody and like snaps on like Todd, who really doesn't mean anything wrong. So that they actually build up the whole, you know, concussion symptom stuff well here, whether they meant to or not, it was a byproduct of it by having Sean be moody and depressed and kind of mood change, you know, swings on a dime.
Yeah, it was well done. Our next match is, not well done. It's Ahmed Johnson versus Rick Stockhauser. We get a Dean Douglas promo as Ahmed walks out. I mean, Stockhauser's awful. He can't even run the ropes.
No, he's brutal.
Very sloppy spine buster. And then Ahmed does another one and hits the Pearl River Plunge.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually a little, I mean, this is only like a minute and a half, but I was actually a little surprised they kept this in. I mean, I know what it was, but, you know, Ahmed had looked pretty impressive up to this point. And with Stockhauser being so bad, like, I didn't think this was very effective at all. This got the illustrious dud for me.
The so, JT2 star? No, my God. This,
Dud City here.
No, yeah, big time dud. Stockhauser was poor rest in peace, Marty Funkhauser would have been better out there than Stockhauser. No, the only highlight here is Michaels. You know, we get to talk about the Sean stuff. King says he sounds like he's retiring, but Vince doesn't think so. And then the Douglas is because him and Ahmed are fighting it in your house.
Right.
Dean tells him to celebrate Christmas early because his rise is going to end on Sunday. So I thought that part was fine. But yeah, nothing going on. Done.
King interviews Ahmed afterwards.
Hang on. Do we get our sponsors? Did you note those?
No, I did not.
We have Karate Fighters, Hot Shot Basketball, and WrestleMania the Arcade Game. So all the hot toys of 95.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. For the Christmas season, yeah. Gearing up. King interviews Ahmed. He repeats his like 4 years of third grade joke, which is very lame.
And then he blames Dean. Right. Dean Douglas, I suppose, not me.
God.
Even he's burying Dean.
Oh, Jesus. This is a bad promo. They did good with Ahmed. I don't know what happened here. This was not good. Ahmed basically just tells King to sit out, and then he does. He was like, won't you sit out? And then King, like, wanders back to the announce booth. So.
Yeah, this is if Dean had really done some work, he wouldn't have even signed up for this at all. And he wants to know why Dean's hiding behind King. More like Douglas. He didn't even do anything. Like, somehow it becomes that he's hiding behind King and feeding him lines.
Doc has his Shawn Michaels denim jacket, replacing Barry. 59.75 for those.
Yeah, they do have a tendency to run a little small. They got Shawn, they got Tager, Diesel, and Brett on the denim jackets. You go to the mall, Chad, you get denim jackets with nothing on them, 80, 90 bucks. But these have the spray paints of your heroes, only 59.75.
It was bad. And then we got this like weird like WWF holiday promo.
Yeah.
Like
I didn't quite see the purpose of this, where like it's like a kid in a prison looking at a lineup of the wrestlers dressed as Santa Claus, Bruce Pritchards, and not in Brother Love gears at and talking to him, but and some pretty bad comedy here with like Harvey Whippleman in the middle of it. I don't know. And then they basically the wrestlers beat down the guy in the middle, right. And it just says Happy Holidays from the WWF. It was pretty bad.
I think it was just their attempt because they did this a lot in like 94, 95. I think it's like their attempt at like the Sports Center type commercial where it's just kind of the wrestlers doing cheesy, weird things.
This is Sports Center. Okay. Yeah. Then we had our first promo for the Raw Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. Was this the first time they mentioned that? Freddie Blassie's the coach rolling up the troops here. We got Yoko and Pad Sids banging people with his helmet and going nuts. So all geared up for the Raw Bowl on New Year's night.
There you go.
And then there was kind of some filler here as we get another interview.
Yeah.
This was a promo from, excuse me. It was a 1-2-3 Kid Sid interview with DiBiase. No, I didn't think much here. I thought Kid kind of sounded weird.
Mm-hmm.
He's still sort of fitting into his role. And then, of course, Sid doesn't say much of note, you know, his usual, you know, let me tell you something, you know, his usual DiBiase checked out as always, so. The tag match may be good at in your house, but this probably wasn't the best sell job. I mean, it was just basic stuff.
I'm surprised they didn't have Brother Love here for this. Like, they've been using him a lot for these interviews.
Right, yeah. I guess they could have trotted him out for that as much as I don't like him. But
kind of weird they didn't. Maybe get him back soon on Raw, Brother Love. Maybe they'll go to the well again. Yeah, I mean,
you know he will.
He'll make at least one appearance, does he?
Yeah, definitely.
DiBiase calls Razor a whiner and a grease ball, says they're a one happy family. They'll be wherever the other one is. So they're really hyping up that basically Sid has kids back no matter what. They'll be the number one tag team. They'll be the next champions. And they're definitely prepping them for that. Because, again, in that Rumble preview magazine, they're slated to fight the Guns for the titles at the Rumble. So they're really lining them up as a threat, as tag teams. Kiss, he doesn't worry about the people, only cares about winning and money. Kiss has Razor manipulated him, treated him like a puppet for years. He puts over Jannetty, which I thought was a nice touch, says that they were champions, puts that over. But come Sunday, they'll show why they're the best team. Sid said he feels bad for Marty. He's a victim of circumstance for choosing the wrong partner. So it's kind of interesting, they're showing respect for Marty and just kind of shitting on Razor. I thought that was an interesting way to go about it. And Sid basically says they're family. I thought this is pretty fun. I don't know. Like, they're actually coming together better than you would expect the two of them. Like, Sid is the big brother, Kid is the whiny bitch, and DiBiase is just the asshole uncle. Like, it's, I don't know, like, they're kind of doing it right with you. It doesn't seem like a team that should gel in any way, but they've actually been okay, and they've kind of woken Sid up a bit with it.
Sid's always a struggle for me because, yeah. I mean, on one hand, he's entertaining, but I don't know. I think as we've seen, you know, I think kind of the history has sort of portrayed that where if you're watching, he's entertaining, but he didn't make you like seek out, you right. know, wanting to, he wasn't a draw or whatever, but yeah. So then we get a promo for next week, which is Yoko versus Razor. So that's coming your way on Raw next week to look forward to. And I think that's it as we head into our big main event, right?
Which it is.
Bob Backlund.
The main event in the middle of the ER.
Good technical start to the match as Jerry the King Lawler goes out and interviews Diana. Diana says if history repeats itself, they will go home happy in your house 5. Diana says no one was listening to Davey Boy before, so she actually gives credit to Cornette for getting Davey Boy Smith a title shot. Mm-hmm. And it definitely seemed like Diana was behind Davey Boy here. I mean, this was a full-on PR like job for Davey Boy. Yeah. And, you know, as King goes back to commentary, he mentions as much, and even Vince is like, wow, I was surprised. I thought she'd be more, you know, neutral. But
seems like she's kind of in the bag for her husband, so there you go. Then Brett has a waist lock on, but Bob's able to reach the ropes. King, when he did come back in, he said in private she'd agreed with what King had said about Brett all these years. So there you go.
Dean Douglas told me that.
And British Bulldog's looking on backstage, the same same couch and camera as Diesel was earlier. Bob's selling his back on the floor. King says Taker's favorite band is the Grateful Dead. That was, I mean, a hokey reference there. They just had split up around this time, so there you go.
Well, he mentions it. He said they disbanded. Yeah,
yeah, well, Jerry Garcia died recently, so they decided not to go on. Bob is on the attack now, working on the arm. Vince talks about Stu Hart's birthday. Like, did you mention this? He says, like, oh, Stu just celebrated a birthday. And I actually looked it up on Wikipedia. Stu Hart's birthday was in May.
So that's weird.
Some bad intel for Vince.
Yeah.
I mean, the work by Bob here is fine, but it's pretty dry. I mean, Bob's definitely not a threat, I didn't think, during this match.
No, not particularly. I mean, they're trying. They're really trying to make him seem like one. King says Brett's ruined the whole Christmas for all the Hart family.
good forearm by Bob right when Brett starts making a comeback, and then Brett does make his comeback in earnest. They go to their second break for the match, so this was a long match too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw two showcase matches on both shows. I think it was pretty clear which match was better, even though I had problems with the Nitro one.
Right.
Back from break, Brett is running through his finishing sequence with a Russian leg sweep, backbreaker, middle rope elbow smash. He goes for the sharpshooter, and predictably, you know, Davey Boy Smith comes into the ring for the kind of cheap DQ. Brett goes after him, and this allows Bob to lock in the crossface chicken wing. And that basically serves as our final hype for In Your House 5 with Brett versus Bulldog as we go off the air. Ended up giving this match kind of a gentlemanly 2.5 stars. I mean, it was fine,
mm-hmm.
Technically fine. The ending was pretty good. I mean, overall, with the hype for Brett versus Bulldog, I as I've talked about it in the last couple of shows, I actually think they sort of lost their way a little bit. I thought this was a little bit better at making Bulldog seem more of a threat,
yeah,
finally heading back into the show. But I still think with, like, King on commentary constantly harping on Brett as, like, a, you know, a feud that won't end. And with Backlund, there was just kind of too much going on, and I kind of wish the focus was still just solely on Davey heading into the title match.
Yeah, maybe they could have done a tag here instead, you know, Brett and someone against Davey and Backlund. I don't know, you know, something to mix it up, but Backlund definitely feels washed here. I mean, just like, and he's not around much longer, just a little bit as a wrestler, so this is pretty much his last, I think, big match as a solo. Vince, it was kind of confusing, because Vince says earlier this is non-title. But then after Bulldog comes in, he said, oh, Backlund wanted to win so he could fight the Bulldog, get in your house. So I don't know what the fuck's going on there. They fucked that up, too.
So weird, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered it all. The match is technically fine, a bit boring. It just kind of existed. It felt like an exhibition again, like they're just kind of going through the motions. It's sad, too, because their whole series, like the Superstars match in 94 and Survivor Series are both so good. And then the 95 matches are just crap. Like the Mania match and this are just feel so blah. It's like they just could not get interested in wrestling with each other again. But I thought the post-match was fine. Added some good heat that had been missing. So, again, fine enough to close this out for In Your House. I went 2.25 on this one. And I think we pretty much touched all the In Your House stuff except, well, we didn't get Taker Mabel tonight. We didn't get Hog.
No.
Triple H. We got the rest of the other stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, at least with this show, as we talked about, they did have the star power. Like, we saw Diesel, we had Sean with the interview, and we saw Brett. So, I mean, again, it, you know, it's a simple thing, but when we see the stars on Raw, they, even though nothing's great, I mean, nothing was great about this Raw, it felt, to me, a much easier watch than the last couple of weeks, just because we had the big guns out there. So,
right,
it was a little better. Yeah, it looks like Bob after this was strictly in a big Savio Vega and Fatu feud on the house show circuit, so. making a difference there.
That's it.
Let's get into our awards. What did you go for match of the night? Not much choice here.
Yeah, it was definitely a rough go. I went Brett Backlund. Is that of attrition?
Yeah, kind of by default. Your segment of the night?
I went with the Sid and Kid interview. I mean, again, not much.
Oh, boy.
I guess he could have went to Sean, but I actually thought the Sid and Kid one was better than the Sean interview.
Yeah, I did the Sean sit-down interview. Mm-hmm. I like that one better. Your MVP?
MVP, I went with Brett. No, I'm sorry. Aja Kong.
Aja Kong, nice mm-hmm. choice. I ended up going with Sean. And I mean, I just thought, like, for him hyping up what was to come at Mania, he did a good job in changing his demeanor. So I went with him. Commentary, anything else besides just King's racist stuff?
That's it, just Kong's face looking like a bowling shoe. That's pretty much all I had.
No debuts, right? No.
None.
Nothing here.
No shots fired.
Yep. And they had a 2.5 rating, so Nitro with a squeaky win, barely skating by there. And what was your final grade on this masterpiece?
I went 5.
Of the show?
This felt like kind of a middle of the road show. It wasn't bad, but nothing really jumped off the page. It just kind of existed.
Yep, I went 5 for the same reason. I mean, it was a little bit of a bounce back for me, because as I said, I have really disliked the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
So at least we're trending upward towards the pay-per-view, so we'll see how that shakes out.
All right.
Want to do our combo?
Let's do it. Best show, I think, is an easy layup here tonight.
Yep, Nitro.
So Nitro's won 3 in a row and 5 out of 6. And
yeah,
5
really
out of 7 since Halloween Havoc.
Well, and if you go go even up above that, like, look, I mean, Raw right. won the 10-30 one.
Yeah.
But Nitro won the previous 4.
Yeah, so
Nitro's
clearly been the better
won
quality
4,
show.
5, 6, 7, 8. Nitro's won 9 out of 11.
Right.
That's pretty good. Pretty good run.
Yep.
Best match, I think, is pretty easily the main event tag from Nitro.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
I would
segment.
Say our best segment is pretty easily the Horseman Orndorff thing.
Yep. Better commentary?
I would say Nitro pretty easily tonight. Bobby had a good night.
Yep.
I mean, Eric was kind of a little more annoying, but I mean, just King really annoying.
King's bad.
I gotta say, King's really bad watching these Raws. So
he ain't going away.
I feel like I'm a little more forgiving of Horn Dog King, even though, like, that certainly can be grating. At least right. it feels like he's engaged in the Attitude Era stuff. Here, right. he's just, I mean, it don't.
Like,
it seems
yeah,
like he's way more concerned in getting yeah. his stupid jokes in. And
right.
It's not helping. Overall star.
I mean, Pillman was the best.
Want to go with Pillman?
Yeah, I think he deserves
okay.
it.
And then our rating winner was Nitro, so clean sweep for our Nitro on our awards.
All right, so that's it. We're up to In Your House 5, so on our next episode, Chad will be talking that and that only. So if you have any feedback for us that you want us to read on air for that if you want us to read on air for that episode, go ahead and let us know at bigelow34.probars.com. Just go to the Wrestling Warzone feedback section and type it in there, and we'll read it on air. So share any thoughts about that show or anything surrounding it. We'll be happy to talk about it. Also, at the message board and on Facebook, we kicked off our GWWE Greatest Match Ever project. We're taking nominations. We have quite the robust list. But I'm looking forward to this one, Chad, versus some of the other ones we've done, the wrestler and the tag team. Because it's a little bit easier to prep for and to understand what to watch. Like, for the wrestler ones, there's so many nominations, but you want to watch kind of a few matches of each wrestler to get, like, a feel for them, their best work. But with this, you're really just kind of watching the matches, and you can isolate and grade accordingly. I think people are a little bit more on the same wavelength when it comes to match grading versus trying to, you know, quantify what makes a wrestler great. So I think we'll get a little bit more unison in some of this, and I think it'll it should flesh out nicely. But I think the back end of the list will be where the interesting stuff is. Like, what are those 4-star matches that people use to fill out? What are the hidden gems they discover? So I think this one's going to be a lot of fun. We have the Facebook group we can add you to if you reach out, or just go to bigelow34.proboards.com. There's a section there as well. Any thoughts on that project?
No, I mean, I think you covered it. It'll be just go out and watch some stuff and make the case for the matches you watch.
All right. Also, just want to announce here we have a brand new tournament kicking off, Chad, at Place of Nation, just in time for Easter. Some folks out there want to know what the greatest candy is. So we have 128 candies have been ranked, and we'll battle it out to see the king of the candy. Of course, Easter is a big candy holiday. We'll have 4 regions, candy bars, chocolate candy, sugary snacks, and sweet treats. Those candies have been seeded from 1 to 32 in each region. And we're going to try something new this time. The tournament's actually going to take place on a very special Facebook page that's been created just for it. Every day, 4 matchups will be posted. Each one will be open for voting for 2 days. The tournament starts March 10th and concludes on Easter Sunday. So if you go to Facebook and search PTBN Greatest Candy Tournament, you can like the page and make your votes count. So check that out. Of course, that's in conjunction with our buddy Andy Atherton and all of his shows in the Pop Feed, Great Debate specifically, kind of feeding into that, no pun intended. So be sure to check that out. And PlaceNation.com each and every day for all of your pop culture needs. Subscribe to our feeds, PlaceNation Wrestling, PlaceNation Pop, PlaceNation Wrestling feed. Me and Scott will be back next Monday, Chad, with our buddy Peter Winson, as we're really getting close to WrestleMania 5 now. Of course, last week we had Steve Bennett on looking at the January MSG house show. So that should be a lot of fun. And, of course, lots of stuff popping on both of the feeds. As always, we had a brand new show drop last week. It was the Saved by the Bell cast. You referenced it earlier. My friend Aaron and his buddy Jordan, not my friend, looking at the first episode of Saved by the Bell as they work through the show. I guess Aaron's never seen it, right? That's the hook. They're kind of stealing
Jeff. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, yeah. Aaron had never watched an episode, and so that's kind of, it's kind of Jeff Warren's wrestling for Saved by the Bell, right, to a degree. Yeah, yep.
So, okay. So we have a new main event coming this week as well, so be sure to check that out, or the hot news across the world of the flamethrower, some may call it. And, of course, also today dropped a brand-new Marvel Age Masterclass, Ben Morris and Todd Weber, looking at the 1969 Part 1 in the history of Marvel. So lots going on in all the feeds. Be sure to check each and every one of those out each and every day. And, Chad, I guess we'll aim for next week, maybe? What do you think?
Maybe. I'll have to look at my schedule. I'm a very, very, very busy man.
He got ball pits to jump in, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll see what we can do. All right. For Chad, I'm JT. Smell that napalm, my brothers. We'll talk to you soon. Everyone take care.